welcome to Check It Out, Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you two games by the people for the people and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Wobber.
Oh, I'm Braden Cameron. Sorry.
Well, it's okay. Who goes new fish?
Yeah, we should have figured that out.
who's granddad's back?
Who's that third person on the microphone there?
What the? Ready to kick some ass. Everybody move my desk. It's me, Gary Butterfield.
It's Gary Butterfield. And this week we're going to be doing Subsurface Circular and West of Loathing.
Mm-hmm.
Two very different games. And very different. And as you might have heard, we have Gary.
Gary, it's me. Yes. It's true.
The old co-host, he's back.
Yeah, the old co-host with the second or third to most, depending.
I think that's why I forgot to say my name, because I was used to being the guest when you two were doing it, and I was just like, I'll just wait till it's my turn.
Yeah, no, it's time for us to do our classic showdown.
Yeah,
that we have, mm-hmm. And I'm back for that. I mostly just came back because I wanted to talk about West of Loathing.
Yeah.
But
I made you play the other game anyway.
And I played the other game, which I was interested in, regardless. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Yeah, doing pretty well.
Things been going well?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like what you've done with the place.
Why, thank you. It's been some good games that you've missed. I'm sorry about that.
Mm. Oh, it's okay. I experienced them vicariously through you guys.
Yeah. You missed Battle Cats. You missed Realm Grinder.
I have Battle Cats on my phone. You watched me download it, my friend.
We exist in real life too. You missed FTL? Like, you clearly didn't play that game ever.
I didn't, I have no standing opinions of FTL, apparently. You got me beat.
Well, you certainly aren't allowed to tell them in this episode, so.
Yeah.
Because we're going to talk about some Subsurface Circular.
Mm-hmm.
So, Subsurface Circular. It is it's a text adventure game, but with some pretty graphics. Mm-hmm. From Bithell Games, or Bithell Games. I believe it's Bithell, but I like that it's also can be pronounced Bithell. who are the guys who did Thomas is Alone that we did previously.
Right.
It's really just the one guy.
Yeah, pretty much. I think he has some people, but yeah, it's definitely that is the guy's last name. So, but this is deals with some similar concept. Similar concepts, and it's a far future detective text adventure game.
Mm-hmm.
Nick,
yes,
you can correct me if I'm wrong. Did we actually do an episode on Volume, or did we just talk about it?
I don't think we ever did an episode on Volume.
Yeah, I played it for the show, and then we ended up doing something different. I think
that is correct.
Yeah. So Volume is his other game. Mm-hmm. Of the three that he's done. Close to by himself, like the Wikipedia just has him listed as just him. So I think he's pretty close to a solo developer.
Pretty damn impressive,
For sure. And it they've gotten more, definitely more impressive,
yeah.
Visually, and kind of like seem like they would have a larger team behind them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this game was also interestingly released. He literally just like said, "What would you guys think about like us just like announcing and releasing a game all at once?" And then did. like that same hour or something. So
like, what do you think about this? Well, it's happening.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of just popped up, and it was opportune for us to hop on it. So let's talk about it. What did you guys think? What do you like about it?
Well, I think visually it's really beautiful. Like, even though it's very simple, you're playing entirely as a tech or a robot, basically, and it kind of they look a bit like the droids from the like new Star Wars movies,
yeah.
At least in my opinion. And I thought it was really interesting that it was such a simple layout and such a simple design scheme, but it actually, you know, was very personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so they're like self-conscious automatons, basically, that are incorporated in human life. But they're kind of a separate but equal thing. Obviously, they're under strict laws, specifically the Asimov's laws of robotics.
Mm-hmm.
And you are traveling on this subway that is dedicated purely to these techs. So you run into various of them, but you never run into any humans.
The titular subway.
Yeah, the subsurface circular. That is the name of the subway you are on.
You don't have to spend a lot of time thinking, when are they going to get to the subsurface circular? Like, they just start on it and end on it.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts, Gary?
I think, like, I like the visual aspect of it. It doesn't need it. Like, you could do this game in Twine.
Totally.
It's essentially, you know, it's like a Twine game, which is, you know, the visuals add to it. And it is the idea of, like, solving this mystery, like, while you're on a subway. Mm-hmm. I think is cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has a little bit of like the puzzle solving in it has a little bit of like the problem. Me and Cole just did Contradiction on Abject Suffering, which would have been a good comrade game if I came across it and didn't show up on that show, like,
right.
And I was still doing comrade, I would have suggested it for that because it's a good like bite-sized indie thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it has a thing where you talk to somebody a lot, you get a keyword. Then you go back and you talk to somebody else about everything you can talk to them about. You use that new keyword to get a keyword you then use on the first person.
Yeah.
And then you go. So there's like the actual like play of it ends up being like, it doesn't feel very, it's not very puzzly.
Yeah.
There's like not a lot to your choices. Mm-hmm. You have a choice of like different approaches you can take with guys, but a lot of times it felt like they get to the same place.
Yeah.
You know, like I can either make this, you know, say this kind of snarky thing or this kind of nice thing, but it doesn't matter. The guy reacts the same way. So like it kind of, the gameplay of it kind of bummed me out. Like, I think the story is kind of neat.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing super revolutionary, but like kind of neat, which we'll talk about in the spoiler section. But like the actual play of it, like I just wanted a little bit more puzzle.
Yeah, there's definitely no actual branching paths and the puzzles are very light. In fact, there's one you may not have gotten to that's just a super annoying take on the keyword thing you're talking about.
Mm.
I think I know exactly what we're talking about.
I did not like that. There's one where there's two robots where one of them is the kind of emotional stability for the other one. They're two detectives.
Yeah.
And so his emotional state is reflected in the one who actually talks. And so he's basically just there to be chill, but you can then piss him off to get the other one pissed off. And it's a ton of back and forth. Like, just like, in order to get to the answer I need to keep changing this guy's emotional state, which means I need to go to the other guy.
Yeah. And one of them, their names was Woody, and the other one was named Matthew. I'm kidding. That was just true detective jokes.
I didn't remember names, so you could have went with any. But I think they're all Greek letters plus two numbers, so I don't think that was...
Yeah.
I should have realized, but it went like, right over my head.
Trubot detective or whatever.
Yeah.
And this is a minor thing, and it's just like a real classic Gary complaint about something, but on those ones where you have to go back and forth, it takes a while for like the conversation to shut down.
Yeah.
Like you like take a second. I was like, oh, if this was just text, like at the very least it would go much quicker. Like it wouldn't be as nice a presentation.
Yeah.
But there's like
a 10-second pause after you end the conversation before the window's gone. You can choose someone else.
Or sometimes when a robot's coming up with his answer, and like at first I thought the idea is that's how you know that maybe they're being deceptive or something, like they have to think about it. But because there's no branching paths, like you never make any decisions based on somebody being deceptive.
Right.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
You know, it just has this kind of, it has this like pace, like I think you lose a little bit with the presentation as well as gain a little bit.
Yeah.
I think. And that's really my only quibble. Like it's a really simple like text adventure game. Like this is like one of the simplest things, you know, I think that you guys or we have done on the show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is just like a straight up, you know, and it's like just almost just like a narrative story. Like it's almost like a text gone home kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like that part of it too. I think, you know, without the branching paths and the fact that the puzzles were very simple and you're just basically kind of following a logic train, which I think, you know, kind of makes sense in a sense, because you are just talking to people. It's not like you're actually getting physical clues or making big discoveries or anything. Mm-hmm. I did really like kind of just like the narrative element of it. I also really liked almost in every, if you want to call it a scene or something like that, there's a tech that shows up wearing headphones and then he just becomes the background music.
Yeah.
Which mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's a really nice way to like throw in a little music to spice things up once in a while.
And you can try and talk to them, but they never answer. So you're shouting into the void.
And you get some kind of like some jokes from that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that your character will do. So it has a little bit of that like classic adventure game. You present a lot of options because some of them are jokes.
Right.
The humor is very understated, which I think is a thing in Volume and Thomas Was Alone as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
where it's like kind of funny, but it's hard to, it's not like a knee slapper. It's like, oh, you know, like it's very British. Like this guy seems very British, and the whole thing seems extremely British to me. Yeah. It is like among the most British.
I think one of my favorite parts in the game, and I don't know if it would have come up a little bit differently, because one of the first techs you meet, you can ask them to give you a joke. Then later you meet another tech who asks you to give a joke, and you can make up a joke. It's really fantastic. Like, I was so excited because they're just like, here's this setup punchline joke maker in the middle of this game.
But it's not like none of the jokes work.
You
have to actually do the joke that the old, like, you have to tell them the one that the old man tells you in that car.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't get that joke. I made a joke.
Did you?
And it worked.
I feel like the old man gives you, so it's a little bit of that like Monkey Island thing.
Yeah.
But it's not the joke that you learned before, I guess is my point. Like, okay. I thought that was going to rub off, like that was going to come off too. I was like, oh, cool. Like, I learned a joke. Is it testing my memory for that? But it's just like you either make a joke, like it's got the setups and punchlines, or like the old man will give you a cheat.
Yeah, I think I tried making a joke, but maybe just because it wasn't cohesive, it didn't work. But I think you actually need to tell them the joke in order for it to proceed.
Yeah, there's a set of A's and a set of B's, like two columns, and they don't 100% match up.
Yeah,
there's not a B that matches for every A.
Right.
So there are setups you can do that there isn't a punchline for.
Yeah.
You kind of have to work backwards from the punchline and find the correct setup.
One bit of the understated humor I actually liked a lot is there's a priest you come across later in the game, mm-hmm. who their entire the text entire religion is actually Thomas Was Alone. Yeah. They just reference all of the characters from Thomas Was Alone and their strife and what they went through, and that's inspirational to the, because they're essentially the first self-aware AI was the bots from Thomas Was Alone, the programs from Thomas Was Alone. Mm-hmm. So they're all in the same universe apparently, because all these texts they grab a hold of one of the characters from Thomas Was Alone and worship them. So that's really good. And there's one of the pieces you can actually get them to tell you basically the entire text of Thomas.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I noticed that when I was in between plays, because I stopped halfway through and then I picked it back up, as that there was an achievement for listening to everything that he said about it, and I was like, okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's something like one of the things, so they have that like, I like that little Thomas Was Alone thing, and like one of the things that is neat, you know, you bring up the priest, like, is there some kind of cool like world building? Like, it's not super super deep,
right?
But you do like talk to these people and learn a little bit about this like AI mm-hmm. culture every time, which is neat. Like, it feels like a cool setting,
yeah.
You know, for things, and it's a neat, like, if you read about Thomas Bithell and like what he's doing with this, like, this is the first of the Thomas Bithell shorts, and the idea is he's going to do these games. He's like one setting, or one sitting kind of games, mm-hmm. And one setting, I guess.
Yeah.
One setting, one sitting games that just go by, you know, pretty quickly and are just like little stories. He wants to do like a bunch of these.
Yeah.
Which is a cool idea, because mm-hmm. like Thomas Was Alone, which I generally like, but, you know, didn't super love. And then Volume, which like we never got a chance to talk about it, but I don't really like Volume very much. This is a better, I think this is. He's better at this. I think he's good at this.
I liked the storytelling of Thomas Alone almost better than the gameplay itself. It wasn't, wasn't very strong. Yeah. It was, you know, puzzle platforming that was very minimalistic. So,
and I think that's kind of like turning into his niche, which is to take these genres, do a very simplified version of them, and then like just add some kind of quirky good writing to it, which is nothing wrong with that. Sounds like I'm saying that to be damning. I don't mean it to be damning. It's just kind of, that's turning into his thing. And now with these minis, I think he's going to do it with these like little text or little tiny experiential games, and kind of add his sense of humor and kind of sense of whimsy.
Yeah. to it. I mean, I'm down for that. I did really like this game's story and its setting, and, you know, everything else was very secondary to that. But those parts were, I felt, pretty strong, and I enjoyed them quite a bit.
Yeah, I wish it was on mobile.
Yeah.
It would just, like, anytime I play something like this that, like, has these little, you know, I'm just kind of reading in the game. Like, text adventures are really good on mobile. Like, text-based adventure games are just, like, really excellent there.
Yeah, I think it did kind of remind me of, Nick, with the other robot mobile game that we played.
The robot test one.
Yeah. Something black or whatever mm-hmm. that was.
Able
yeah, I think there's black. I think there's, yeah, I could see this being, if it was more text and on mobile, I think it would have been really great too.
Yeah, That would have been awesome. That's a great avenue for this. So yeah, we're going to talk a little bit more about how that story wraps up in the spoiler section, because I do think it's pretty cool. But let's move on to talking about West of Loathing.
Yeehaw!
So West of Loathing, fair warning if you somehow aren't aware, we know these guys, at least a couple of them. Gary, you know them better than Brayton and I have, but we've definitely met them and have interacted with them and like them quite a bit. And they are asymmetric. And they did Kingdom of Loathing, of course. And this is their standalone non-MMO single player RPG slash adventure game.
Yeah, like like very specifically like open world RPG.
Yeah.
Like it is a has a lot of adventure game elements, but it is also trying to capture a little bit of that, like, you know, big crazy world having locations pop up on your map, Bethesda.
Totally.
Thing to it.
Yeah, set in a Western setting, all stick drawn, hand drawn characters and backdrops and everything, as you would expect as an offshoot of Kingdom of Loathing. And yeah, what do you guys think about it?
We're doing our like Check It Out Comrade cage match, as we mentioned off camera. So it's Gary versus Brayton in the Comrade cage. Settle up, partner. time to get into it. Because the reason why I wanted to come back specifically to talk about this, because I really love this game. And not like I do know the dudes, but I was very like worried because dudes I knew were making a game and like, what if it's bad?
Right.
And I've really lucked out this summer because like between this and Tacoma, like people I know are putting out really good games. Mm-hmm. And I really loved it. But Brayton, on the other hand, brum, brum, brum.
I found the humor very charming. I liked, you know, the basics of the game, but I kind of felt like maybe if I would have played them in the opposite order of substation or sub circular spin around, that I would have subsurface circular, that I probably would have not been expecting as much. Because there is kind of like a weight to the story of Subsurface Circular, and West of Loathing is nearly plotless. You know, as much as the humor is there, I feel like it wasn't enough to carry the game.
Wow. yeah, I mean, it's like the plotlessness, like it is just an open world thing. There are a couple of plots, like you have to find them. You know, like there's a couple threads that do have plot that you dig, but it is a humor like game. Funny is the primary purpose, and then what little bits, like there are moments, like there are things, little side quest things are kind of scary that happen west of Loathing, or that are you know, effectively kind of dramatic, but you have to find them. Like the main thing is a vehicle for jokes, and then the so it definitely takes a backseat. That kind of you know, a direct narrative is a little bit less emphasized.
Yeah, that said, like, it does, it may not be a, like, a goal plot line that starts you off at saying, like, okay, clearly you know what you're doing besides staking off West, because that's pretty much all the plot line you get. But everything is very chainy. Like, I never felt like I was at a loss for things to do, or without understanding of what kind of the main story quest to continue along was. That all seemed to be very straightforward and in my face most of the time, and especially since your partner is available for tips and stuff if you do happen to kind of lose your thread.
Yeah, they guide you, you know, fairly well. It's possible to like kind of lose the thread for some of the side stuff.
Oh yeah.
But even then, the partner system is like really clever because you can say like literally, "Is there anything I'm forgetting?"
Right.
And it will just say like, "Hey, you signed up to do this. You signed up to do this." That cave needs exploring because the professor says there's ancient technology there.
I have noticed some smaller, like, there's no mission log. Your partner stands in for that. But I have noticed there is some things that aren't really considered quests so much as like a puzzle that you may forget about. Like there's in the first area of the game, I'll say the eastern half of the mountains. There's a you find a ritual that what had been being done. You find directions for how to continue the ritual, and it requires you to collect a bunch of items, but none of that is ever on your quest log, really. None of that you can access through your partner. You just kind of have to remember, and there's a lot of shit in this game, and I've forgotten about that multiple times now. So I do kind of wish there was a better way to keep track of kind of all of the minor things, which would I can only really see being done in more traditional quest log style, because then you'd be really clogging up your partner with lines of
yeah,
junk.
There'd be too much.
Yeah.
I think that part of some of that stuff comes from these dudes' backgrounds and kind of values of being more into like traditional puzzle stuff where you take notes.
Sure. Oh, that, you know, definitely I am like that for some too. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that I think they're real into that. So I think the idea is, and that's, you know, that's not something that I particularly love,
no,
you know, personally or anything. I'm not saying that as like an excuse for that issue or necessarily a good thing. Cause that's not how I tend to play things right now. And the thing about, one of the things that I really love about the game though, is that, I saw some of these threads I knew I didn't care for. So like, fairly early on, you're introduced to this ancient technology thread. And one of the ways that articulates is like getting these punch cards that translate this language. And I was just like, oh, there's no way I'm going to do that. Like, I'm not going to grind up the punch cards to like get this language translated. I hate language puzzles and games. Like, it's not for me, you know? And like, and it was still like going to the next thing though, and ignoring that, I still feel like I got a complete story, you know, like a complete like experience rather, like felt very good about, what I'd done, even though I'd left behind some of these side things. You know, for sometimes future playthroughs, because there is a lot to the game that's like plays really different depending on your class, and there's a lot of content, so you're not going to get it all in one go, I think is the idea.
Speaking of classes, what classes did you guys play at?
So I do have a little bit of story there. I started off as the snake charmer, well, snake oil extractor person. And then I found the hard hat in the prologue.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a terrible idea. That makes this game really hard, which I think if there is one complaint I have is that there does seem to be kind of no middle ground between the two. The hard hat does, it's a choice, and it's obviously there for if you're digging around a bunch in the prologue, well, hey, maybe you're up for a little bit of a bigger challenge.
Or for repeat plays.
Yeah, totally. Otherwise, I think without the hard hat, the game, like the actual combat of the game and getting past most of the kind of barriers are pretty simple, it seems, as my second class, which is a cowpuncher.
Yeah, it's the combat is, I think, no great shakes.
Yeah.
Like they do the thing, like JRPGs have terrible combat always. And the best thing you can do is make it go by quick. And for the most part, I think it goes by quick. The animations take a little bit longer than I want them to. Like, I wish there was an option to speed that up and stuff. And there's a middle point in which I was like, there are a couple of climactic fights. I played through as a bean slinger, and a couple of climactic fights where like, oh, this is requiring some strategy.
Right.
But a lot of fights didn't, and I just kind of wanted to get through them, you know, as quick as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And if you work at all to like optimize your guy, you can become like pretty bonkers powerful.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
Like I did a lot, you know, just by kind of buffing equipment and doing things. Like there's a really cool thread as the beanslinger with this dark arts kind of thing, where you learn, you take these negative perks in order to learn spells as you find these books, and like they start off pretty crappy until you put points in them, and then they become like incredible.
Yeah.
So I just got like unstoppable near the end, and I was just playing through on normal. I didn't play through with the hard hat because it was my first playthrough, but I was like literally unstoppable. And the you know, I got to the end, and like combat did become a bit of a chore. You can get through this game without fighting anybody. You can Fallout it and just do everything through dialogue and skill checks.
Yeah, there's no for ducking out of fights. You don't take any yeah. negatives.
Yeah, you don't seem to get any real negatives from dying either.
Yeah.
No, it just, you might have to. So the negative is the resource cost of your buffs. So
yeah.
you can pass out and then have to. But the game is very kind, is like you get more powerful the first couple times you die.
Mm-hmm.
When you get angrier, like your stats actually increase. So you're more likely to beat, you know, whatever beat you until a certain point. And you can actually change that through stats. So you can make it so you can die a bunch of times without having to go back to town. Which is all stuff I'm in favor for. I feel like there's an interesting thread between this and Undertale, where Undertale was a game that was trying to get by on kind of humor and personality, but had mechanics that I think were really odious and really hard and got in the way. And I think if you're going to make a choice, like choosing, you know, to be easier in a game that is about kind of charm and funniness, I think that's a better choice.
I still think they both fall short of actually making JRPG combat good, though.
You can never make it good. Yeah. It's diseased. All you can do is make it not as bad.
Yeah.
It is the closest, you know, you get something like Darkest Dungeon and it's about as close as it got, but it is a flawed, it is the bad genre. Like it is flawed to the bone.
What did you play there, Brayton?
Yeah, I played as the snake charmer or the snake extractor oil man.
How does that continue on? Because I very quickly reset after the prologue.
I enjoyed it. I thought I would take the easiest experience, and I was like, I'm just gonna let them pick my stats for me. And I started, you know, I picked up some spells, and I ended up with a toilet gun, which caused poison damage, which I thought was very entertaining. Mm-hmm. And I had, you know, my backup partner, and I did find the ritual area you were talking about. I wanted to go back, but I obviously didn't have any of the stuff. It was tough for me as someone who's like, has that completionist edge to me, that even in the prologue, there was a part that I missed.
Yeah.
Because I forgot about a thing, and I was like really mad at it. I was like, now I can't do the part of this quest because I forgot. That seemed kind of cruel.
It definitely tugs on my completionist too. There's a, in the prologue, there's like a hole in the wall I discovered, but I didn't have enough dynamite to blow it up because I didn't have the skill I needed, I think, to talk my way into getting more dynamite.
Yeah.
So it's clearly like meant for if you pick this specific class or this beginning trait choice that you get an extra little something, but
yeah. It's like, well, the sheriff asks for a lock, but the only way to get a lock that early is from soap. And there's only one guy with soap, and I accidentally tied him up and had him put in prison.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get soap. And I was like, that, okay.
I feel you. Yeah, you talked about the toilet gun, though. I really like the spittoon gags.
I think humor is like subjective, right? So like it doesn't, you know, that's how much this game works for you at all is going to depend on how funny you think it is.
Sure.
If you don't think this game is funny, you shouldn't play it. But that Splatoon thing, I feel like should win awards. Like that the commitment to that and the way that articulates as you get through the game, because it continues for the whole game.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. The fourth wall breaks more and more.
Yeah, like it gets more and more of a voice.
Yeah,
you know, and that's one of the things I love about the narration is that it does have that voice. It's not neutral at all, and then you start reacting to it and pushing against it to where, you know, you start off and you're just like, yes, okay, it's giving you video game interface options. You know, as it's questioning your decision until the end, you're just like, hell yeah, I'm going to, like, yeah, I'm gonna stick my face in it. Fuck it. I'm gonna pick it out with my teeth, you know, and you start getting more and more spiteful in this arms race with a narrator that's just like really meta and stuff. Like,
so good.
Yeah, it is one of my favorite like bits of writing in a game.
The pants, and that one, the script flips, and it's just like, fuck yeah, I'm getting it. Like, it's just the player character is just like telling the narrator what he's doing.
Yeah.
And it ends with like, congratulations, you just made me write the worst thing I've ever had to write in the history of my career.
You know, which is like super fun because it's like, I mean, and I get that this is not for every, you know, this doesn't apply to everybody, but it's like, it's very fun because that's riff talking and like,
right.
Oh, this very well could be the worst, grossest thing he's ever had to write in his career, you know?
Yeah. I think like, he compared it to like a bondage suit made from cloud skin or something he had to write previously.
It's real, real, real nasty. And then they're not just, it's not the same joke over and over.
Oh, no.
There's the one that's like the D&D nerds. I don't know if you guys found like the D&D for it, like the gaming. It's a really good sequence where the people are playing these war game, like that's all the dorks are in this fort. And they're playing war games, which are cool. Because they are set up, they give you combat scenarios, but there's only a couple ways to get through them. Like you have very limited resources, and it's like a puzzle. Like they turn the combat engine into these like little challenges, and it's pretty fun.
That's neat.
But they have a spittoon there as well, and it's just like, yeah, these like Mountain Dew chugging like nerds have been probably peeing in this. Like from a distance, it definitely looks like there's piss in there. What are you doing? And like to be like, yeah, sign me up for the pee, man. Like I know there's something in here. Like I gotta get it. And it's just like every single time it happened, it made me laugh. Like,
and it's all like free good shit, and all you're putting yourself through is the terrible descriptions.
It's the terribleness. Yeah, it's not a game about being hard. Like, no. It's a game about again, like, it's a medium for getting these goofs.
Exactly. And that's that's an incredible,
it's a cool value to me, you know, because it's like, and for the most part, again, like, you have to think it's funny, and if you don't think it's funny, you're not gonna like the game. But like, it makes me mad at games that are humorous games that don't put jokes places.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's everything is pretty good. Like, everything's a pretty good joke, like, down to these descriptions, down to these stuff. And like, if you sit down for it thinking like, oh, this is a comedy, like, it really works. It'd be fatiguing if like everything was a joke in Skyrim, you know, but it's sort of like, oh, I'm sitting down to play a comedy game. Like, I don't know. I just don't know. Like, it makes me, it's weird. Like, a comparison I thought of is Torment, because in Torment, every NPC you talk to is interesting. They don't make anybody a throwaway character.
Right.
And that's true here too. Like, everybody at least has a joke or something, like, you know, a smile out loud moment, even if it's not a laugh out loud moment. And like, why would you not do that? Like, why would you have a character say like, oh, I hear the king lives in a castle. Fuck you. Like, you know, fuck you, Dragon Quest. Like, why would you ever, you know, make your content shitty?
Yeah, I don't think there's a single line or description delivered straight.
Yeah.
It is a comedy game where everything is a joke, because of course it would be. And I was just talking about this with Brayton beforehand, and I didn't say much more other than, have you played Jazz Punk? Because what a contrast to Jazz Punk, which is supposed to be a comedy game where I don't, like, beyond the humor not being my style, it's just not as everywhere as this is. There's plenty of stuff delivered straight on top of there also being this bonkers, you know, weird humor.
There's like a framework for it.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's like something to do, even if that thing to do is like, you know, there's like things that are funny, but then there's also things that are like very clever.
Right.
Like, there's a thing where like one of the forts has a little battle map on a table. And at one place you can find like little toy skeletons. And if you put the toy skeletons on the battle map and then move the skeletons, an army of skeletons will go to where you move it on the battle map.
Whoa.
Which is like a way that you can solve some of the quests, like, without killing people, without you killing people.
That's pretty smart.
The skeletons kill plenty. But like, there's these little clever touches like that aren't exactly jokes, but they're like interesting. Whereas like Jazz Punk was a lot of like, you look at a character and then you turn away and you look back, they have like bacon on their face. You know, right. Like, that's what you were working with in Jazz Punk, yeah. You know? Okay. Like, I got you, Jazz Punk. You know, it just, I think that like the batting average is pretty high.
What did you get? Did you guys, what were your partner that you picked at the bat there?
I picked the Susie, the woman with the rifle.
Yeah, there's a Susie who's like the family hole died, and then there's the drunk doctor.
And there's a goblin as well.
Right.
Yeah, the family that died.
Okay. How's she play out? I don't think I rolled with her.
I didn't get too far, as you know, but she did. She's okay. She's just really, she has a really powerful gun, is mostly what it is.
That's good. Yeah, I went with the doc, and she's on a very much an undead killing streak. She wants to destroy all undead. And I think at like her third or fourth upgrade, she gets just a like automatically destroy skeleton ability, which is incredible. It of all sizes, if it's a single target, she can with one action destroy it, and that's incredibly powerful. However, you cannot go down any of the like necromantic art stuff with her.
Yeah.
She will 100% like get pissed at you if you try to do any of that. So
there's actually four, because there's the miner as well.
The kook.
Crazy Pete, who I ended up taking, who's like the one of the things about the game, and it's one thing I want the game to be like wikied, because there's a lot of like interesting little details like that.
There's already a wiki.
Yeah. I want it to be fully wiki.
Yeah.
Like it's not totally done yet. But there's like, all the companions level up in different ways.
Yeah.
So like, I took the miner, and, whenever I got near a mine, he'd be like, hey, here's a mine if you want to go check it out. And then as I went and learned more about mining, I got a perk called Mindsplaining, which allows me to like tell people about mines and get, bonuses, get experience for telling them. And it made him more powerful as I took, you know, checked out more mines. Like he was like a single issue voter.
That's cool.
In that respect, I know the when you take the goblin with you, you can he can speak. That's the one you want to do for the non-lethal, and he can speak goblin.
Yeah, and just talk down everybody.
Yeah.
Oh, I learned how to speak goblin.
Yeah. He can. I think he can do talk down other things. Like Griff was saying, how he's the good non-lethal guy.
Got it.
So I think if I do another playthrough, I'm going to try not to kill anybody.
That's cool.
And see how that works.
Yeah, do it. Do you have to take big... I think you have to take, like, big threatening then, or not... You have to take, like, the persuasion skills for that, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
I don't totally know. Like, you don't get, like, you know, again, you don't get everything through one playthrough. So, like, you have to, you don't get every skill, you know, like I was buying skill books and stuff, but I was also putting points into spells and things. So, and there are lots of, excuse me, lots of things I missed.
And then there is one more choice at the beginning I'll talk about. We're going to talk about more in the spoiler section. Gary's actually beaten the game and he can talk us through a little bit more of where it all ends up. But one more choice at the beginning that I know has influence on how the game plays out is your horse. What horse did you pick, Gary?
Oh, I picked the spooky horse.
Spooky horse.
Yeah, I was not going to not do the like ghost, like spooky ghost horse.
I ended up with spooky horse too. I originally took the doofy horse and I really liked him, but I think I ended up making a strategic choice. I think I looked up what their perks were and went with spooky. What'd you go with, Brayton?
We all took spooky.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's too good of a horse.
Yeah, well, I mean, the black horse was cool, but it was like super shy and was being a real pain in the butt to capture. And I was like, forget it. I just don't care. And then I didn't want the normal horse because it was a normal horse. And then I thought, like, I don't want this to be like, I don't want to have like a goof adventure. And by that, I mean, like, I don't want to have the bacon face adventure. So that's why I didn't choose the crazy googly eye horse.
I think that the googly eye horse and Pete both have more random event stuff happen between when you're traveling. I think they both increase that, so they both lead to kind of just coming across a lot of weird stuff.
I didn't end up actually like looking up the perks or what have you, so I didn't know what they did. I just kind of went by instinct.
I only did a little bit. I've done a little bit here or there where there's a clear choice.
I think spooky helped me find a graveyard at one point. Well, the Dave yard.
Yeah.
That's where the thing is. That's where the ritual is.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I had to do something else there too.
I think there's a whole bunch of dead Daves there.
Yeah, and it's all dead Daves.
I think Dave, the cook at the first town, wants you to go find his recipe that somehow got buried with another Dave or something.
Yeah. Dave switch. Dave swap.
I mean, I'm really enjoying it. I think that I'm gonna continue with it. I do find it quite funny, like the vast majority of the time. So I'm glad that the humor is on key with me, and I'm excited to see where it goes from here.
It maintains, in my opinion. And I didn't, you know, when we get to the spoiler section, I can't talk about all the things because both there's like kind of two major side quests I didn't complete.
Right.
So I need to go through and do the ritual one and then the ancient technology one.
I'm working on ancient tech stuff too. So you'll already not be spoiling something for me, which is great.
Yeah. No, I mean, I just did the basic ending. Like I got to the end and there's a final sequence that I want to talk about that's really neat, but it's I didn't do those side things. So I have another playthrough in me where I get to like actually fully complete it and do the stuff I didn't do.
And we didn't mention there's a lot of content here, but if you cut through to storyline quests and stuff, I think you can get this done in what, like 6-8 hours?
Yeah, my play clock is 7 hours.
Yeah.
So I didn't do those two major things, but I did all the other side stuff that I ran into.
And you did like the necromantic.
Yeah. I followed the necromancer stuff, and then I did you know, if I came across an area, I went and looked at it.
Cool.
So I didn't grind up areas.
Right.
You know, I didn't you know, wander until I could find everything. I'm pretty sure there's some stuff I missed.
Right.
So.
Okay, so let's do some admin stuff before we talk about spoilers for both of these games. Of course, if you, well, you know what, I'm gonna be a little bit light on admin stuff since we're gonna have some changes of pace going on, but do have one big announcement to make. First of all, Brayton will unfortunately not be joining the show beyond this episode.
That's he's still true. Alive.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
I think so.
he's not sick or anything. No. Like, it's, he's okay.
He will not be my permanent co-host, much like Gary previous to him.
Yeah.
Both of the people who have left me.
Nick Black Widow Glauber.
Yeah, unfortunately it's something that I wasn't able to continue because of real life time stuff. And but I thank the audience for putting up with me for the last few episodes.
Oh, they love you. Oh, everybody loves you. Yeah, so I'm going to take a little bit of a hiatus on the show, try and figure out what I would like to do next, because I think it's ready for a little bit of a change of pace. I'm not quite sure exactly where I'm going to go with it yet, but you guys will be the first to know. I'll probably be heading into our Slack to kind of weigh some options as to what we want to do next, but don't expect an episode for at least a couple weeks, and you'll be the first to know when I figure out what I want to do next. So yeah, if you'd like to support the network and the show, you can always head to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. And there you can throw us a couple bucks a month, get access to the early access feeds, get shows a week ahead of time, as well as access to our Slack and some other goodies, including exclusive episodes of Abject Suffering and other stuff. Abject Suffering being like the best damn show on the network. So, but yeah, I think that's about it. And we'll do a little ditty here and come back, talk about some spoilers for both these games.
So the end of West of Loathing, which I don't want to totally spoil because Nick's still playing it.
Yeah.
The thing that's neat about it, the two things I really love, is you get to the final town, you solve some puzzles in the final town that are kind of the last series of puzzles. And they do an ending sequence that is on a train, like in a classic Western fashion.
Sure.
That carries forth, I feel like, the values of the whole game, where like there are multiple solutions to every like mini obstacle you have to deal with. You can have a you can solve your way around the whole thing. There's a character, you know, who claims to be a specific kind of function, and if you can go find a symbol of that office and wear it, then you just get elected as that function and you can skip the whole ending. It is exceedingly clever and good. And at the end, one of my favorite jokes is you get to the last town, there's a movie theater. When you get to the town, it says projectionist wanted, and then under it says coming next week, projectionist wanted too, which is funny. But then once you've done whatever the thing, it just says West of Loathing credits. And whatever you want, you can watch this Fallout-esque like ending slide that goes through all the areas you've been through.
Excellent.
All the things and tells everything. But the game doesn't end. Nothing changes. You can keep playing it if you want. It's just up to you when you want to end the game.
Can you keep like go back and change what that ending sequence would show?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It shows the updated credits for like whatever you've done.
That's really smart. I like that a lot.
Yeah, it's super cool.
You did remind me of another one of the really good early jokes, though, and that's the lot available signs.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot available, a lot available. Not a lot available after the sign.
Not a lot available after the sign. I mean, like the that stuff, like, man, like,
it's really,
you know, I heard a rumor about it. What is it? Well, the rumor is when you don't have complete information. You've only heard a little, like, there's a lot of that kind of stuff that I think is, like, very funny.
Yeah.
To me. It's a weird, like, this could have been in the first place too, in the first part, but like, you know, the humor totally worked for me. Like, there are parts, you know, like I said, there are like mechanical parts that I did find like mildly frustrating.
Sure.
You know, like not hugely frustrating, but just like, there is a little bit of that. Like, I can understand to Brayton's point, like, if you are a completionist, this game will be hard for you. Because you have like, there are things that are limited resources that you have that are required to like finish quests, usually just open a thing. But if you feel like, oh man, I have to leave this thing behind, like there's a box with something in it, I can't stand to leave that behind, you're going to have to leave behind some boxes. Like, it's just, you know, you have 5 keys and there are 10 boxes in this area, you know, to break it down. And like, that definitely got at a certain point when I realized how the game was like using inventory, you know, like how you just get a lot. So getting a consumable from one of those boxes didn't really matter because I have so many consumables.
Right.
You know, or like getting a weapon didn't really matter because I have a really good set of weapon and they're giving me good weapons at like a good pace. You know, it took me a while though to like feel like that was okay. Like, initially I was pretty frustrated. I did the same thing you talked about. And I also took lock picking. And like the needles that you use to pick locks are extremely rare. Like, you eventually get to where you can craft them, but even then, like, the materials to do it are also limited.
Right.
You know, so they're like locks I didn't pick. And I can see that being a tough thing if like you play through as a completionist.
Yeah, it's rough. I'm going to have to go look up where all the safes are because I haven't gotten safe cracking yet, but I want to open all those fucking safes.
I didn't open one safe in the game.
Yeah.
Like, and it was just like, you know, man, that's a lot of empty, you know, a lot of boxes. And the point where I came to peace with it was when I realized like, oh, I'm probably going to go through this again.
Yeah.
So, you know, I want to see more of this stuff. I want to try the different companions. Like, flatteringly, like, there's a bunch of duck feed Easter eggs in it. So it's like, true. I want to see all that stuff.
Sure, Curly.
Yeah. Curly Butterfield's mine. The and I guess, like, at first I thought Gary the Goblin was a Gary reference because Will told me he said, like, a line that I said. But everyone will say duck feed lines at the two duck feed locations.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the two duck feed locations are real good and obvious and right at the beginning. So go check those out at the very least. Yeah.
It is cute.
So let's talk a little bit about Subsurface Circular before we call this quits.
Okay.
It's a detective story, as we said. And the main question that comes up right at the beginning is there's been disappearing texts, and no one's quite sure why, and everyone's heard rumors about it. And someone wants you to go off of your programming. This isn't coming down from management. You're not supposed to be looking into this, but they want you to look into the missing texts. And so the whole dialogue plays out from there of you trying to essentially rule out possibilities. First thing you hear about is this red tech, and you manage to scratch him off your list. The other is human aggression. You manage to scratch that off your list. But what you end up coming down to and the conclusion your character ends up creating, and again, there's no actual branching paths here. There's no actual choices. It's just all leading towards the same thing.
This is where it leads to. This is the story.
Yeah, the mystery is the mystery.
Yeah. And so where it all ends up into is you find out that there's been a big increase in manufacturing of techs, and it sure seems like there's been some numerical errors. And it looks very likely that there haven't been any disappearances at all, that there's just miscounts. And that is the report you end up sending off to management. Mm-hmm. And then you end up running into Red and one of his cronies who come to you and spill the beans, and that was exactly what they wanted you to do. They wanted you to find that story and to send that off to management, because what's actually going on is the techs are humans are working with techs to lead a revolt, essentially.
Yeah, to destroy management, to change the techs into the true leaders of society and allow humans to do manual labor again.
Yeah, it's a very weird idea situation that they want to replace. Instead of humans being, there's a lot, it's essentially what's happening in modern era to a much smaller degree at the moment, but is going to be increasing ever more, in that people are getting displaced by robots, right? Their ability to actually find work in certain areas has become near impossible because manufacturing robots can do all that work for them. Well, so what the humans want to do is just make the robots do all of the leading and have the humans all still have their jobs, which seems like a very fucking stupid way to run a civilization. But it does at least play out in a cool way in the story. And the twist is pretty fun. And at the end, there is one final choice as to what you get the final say as to whether or not you kill Red and thus leave the status quo, or kill yourself and let the whole thing go.
Not status quo, like the... that leaves the I think that, like, I mean, as much as the story, the actual story itself, which, like, I mostly like, I think that the cool thing about it is that it is an original angle. Like, you don't start out thinking this is going to have anything to do with human automation, you know, like robots taking human jobs,
right?
And that's at least like a semi fresh angle to take this from. Like, I was expecting some, like, kind of garbagey, you know, just like robot, you know, AI laws of robotics, like AI uprising shit,
right?
You know, in a real, like, kind of by the numbers,
yeah, that
expression of that,
them realizing they're superior in every way. That's the traditional sci-fi robot story, right?
Yeah. So it does take a different angle on it, which I appreciate.
Right. And that's part of what happens, though, is that there's the idea that the techs are better to manage everyone, but Red specifically is seeking out a tech that's more intelligent than he is to make the right call.
Right.
And that's kind of like a weird, it comes up a bit when you're able to use the passcode to, like, dig down into people's, like, or the tech's like secret communication files, like, right, the root files.
Just the shortcut, the back door.
Right. And it, like, allows them to, like, basically disconnect from their terrible programming. And it's really interesting, like, when you think about what that is in terms of, like, humans. Like, I don't know. That's the way I thought about the whole time. It's just, like, the turning off the media for a little bit so you could actually think.
Yeah. That's definitely, at least with one of the robots, that's pretty much explicitly what's happening.
It's the same thing happens in Westworld.
Yes.
It's like when they do the disable personality functions or whatever,
right? Mm. Yeah.
I can't remember what they call it in Westworld, but, like, it's explicitly for, like, a Westworld thing.
There's specifically one robot who's like he's an athlete robot and can't stop talking about his sponsor.
Yeah. Some of that, like, energy cells.
Yeah. He's just responding with these batteries, trying to, like, sell you on these batteries every time because he has a sponsorship deal. And you can turn off his high-level programming and get down to low-level stuff, which allows him to kind of get rid of all that for a moment.
Yeah, because it's one of my favorite jokes is, like, you ask him if there's any way he can talk about anything else, and he's like, let's find out.
Yeah, you just keep talking to him, and nothing changes.
Yeah.
He's, that reminded me of, like, a Levi character, like, in our game group.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
When Levi plays a character who gets, like, obsessed with something.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, when we did our Deadlands game.
Yeah, Deadlands.
Yeah, like, that's a very Levi trope, I think.
Yeah.
Is to, like, have that, like, you know, keep bringing it back to that single thing, and it was very funny.
Yeah.
That's probably the part in which the game, like, the humor worked the most for me, is that character.
Yeah.
Some of the other jokes, like, didn't land for me as strong, but I think that character is pretty funny. And, like, it's pretty clever, like, the idea that, like, he actually has the information but can't shut up about products to get there. I just got, you know, as mentioned, like, got frustrated going back and forth to get to it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Mechanically, there's obvious flaws, but I did like the story a lot. I thought it was pretty entertaining.
It's more interesting. Yeah, it's definitely more interesting than it lets on.
Yeah.
I think initially I was pretty bummed by it. I got to a point, I didn't end up finishing it, actually, but I ended up reading the story afterwards. And it gets to a place that I think is pretty cool. And it's short. It's like 2 hours long.
Yeah, it's not very long.
Yeah. So, like, you can get to the part of it, but it's kind of a little bit of a fake out, I think.
Still, I'm still excited to check out more of these. I hope that he does manage to get some more out and they are successful, because I enjoyed this. I really like, we've said this many times before on the show, but this is a good format for a game, is something you can play in a single setting, like it's a movie, and pay a movie amount for it and enjoy yourself.
What I would love is, I think that when he talked about it, he hasn't said there'll be the same genre engine.
That'd be awesome.
And I would love him to, like, mix it up. Like, take another kind of thing, like, do a little short story like this, but not necessarily have it be a Twine game.
Sure.
You know, that makes sense for, like, the first, you know, one that you do, because it's you know, you can, like, parts of Firewatch were prototyped in Twine. Like, you can do Twine and break down stories into that pretty easy. What I would love to have him do is, like, either do something that's like a more traditional kind of walking sim kind of thing, where there are elements of, like, exploring areas.
Yeah.
You know, I want some, like, environmental storytelling or kind of detective work stuff.
Totally.
I think that'd be very cool.
Yeah, me too.
Even if it follows the same characters, like, take the same detective in this world, build on this world building, and do different genres with this character that each tell little stories about little aspects of it.
But Gary, in my game, he's dead.
Well, that's it. Is it canon?
In my game, he's alive. So.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah.
I was gonna ask, as someone who has a reputation for being the wild card, and, like, I was gonna have you guys guess which one I chose, but
you gave it away.
That would have been the wild card, because it does feel like. Actually, I would think, like, killing him would be, like, I think it wants you to move forward, right? You know?
Well,
like, course, everybody loves a revolutionary.
Yeah.
Like, killing yourself, I think, is probably the expected ending.
It's the Bastion ending.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's why I would, since it's the expected one, that would be the one to guess that Brayton didn't do.
Yeah.
Because you expect the unexpected.
He wild carded his wild card.
I did.
He is like a double wild card.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's how deep my wild card
gets. Joker is wild.
all right, guys, I think we're gonna call it there. Thanks for listening, and thanks for joining me, Gary.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and, thanks, Gary.
Of course. Thanks, guys.
And Brayton, thank you for joining me for the past few months here.
Oh, it's been great.
Been some incredible episodes, so thank you both, and yeah, we'll see you next time.